Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C. Now, the International Organization for Migration reports that thousands of sub-Saharan Africans, mainly from West Africa, from countries like Nigeria, Mali, Gambia, and others, migrants continue to risk their lives as they cross the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. Reports show that in the first half of 2017 alone, over 90,000 migrants arrived in Italy by sea. These numbers reflect a 20% increase from last year. But even as the numbers of migrants continue to grow and many are able to successfully cross to mainland Europe, thousands continue to die on this perilous journey, either by drowning or, as we have recently seen in videos, being captured and held hostage by armed militias in countries like Libya. In fact, a video that was shot by CNN brought to focus the plight of young African migrants being tortured and in other cases sold as slaves. Many say that before the CNN video, which has been a focus of much debate and outrage, there was little international or local reporting on the plight of the migrants. And for long, the African migrant narrative has lacked a nuance necessary to understand the conditions that drive them to making such difficult choices. And this has fueled what many see as the use of the migrant crisis by various political entities in Europe and in Africa to score political points with their bases. Now, we see the role of international actors, including media advocacy exercises by organizations working to bring attention to the issue. But what about local efforts of local media from communities where many of these migrants originate or often end up? So on the show today, we want to look at how to amplify the debate on the migrant crisis on the international, but also on the local level. And in the studio with me, I will be joined by Vincent Makori. He's the host of Africa 54 on The Voice of America. Vincent has been covering this story for years. We're also joined by Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick, a TV producer and reporter with VOA. Heidi, a South African, brings the perspective of somebody who lived in a country that is host to thousands of African migrants. But first, before we get into our conversation with Heidi and Vincent, we asked you, our listeners, for your reaction on the recent video that has been trending showing young African migrants in Libya being sold off as slaves.
My name is Eric Ntalo from Uganda. The images were horrendous. It was very horrific. It was very saddening. The fact that it's no longer foreign or internationals treating our brothers negatively, but we as a continent, Africans versus Africans. So I think it was very disturbing. The images were disturbing, were very gross.
Hey, Upfront Africa. My name is Kaitesi Rukundo. I'm so glad to be here. And I would love to talk about what happened in Libya. As a human being, nobody should go through that experience.
Hello, Upfront Africa. This is Lutu Brand, Kampala, Uganda. When I saw the images of Libya, the slavery that is going on, it looked very awful. It was very disappointing. This is the new day slavery, and it's really not good. It's disappointing that it's still going on in this day and age.
Hello, Upfront Africa. My name is Abraham. I'm based here in Kampala. When I saw the images concerning the slave trade in Libya, it was so inhuman to us. To me personally, I felt bad because I imagine if I was in the same situation. And really, I feel pain for those people who were involved in that.
Hello, my name is Amsenisha from Kampala, Uganda. I think those countries, for example, Libya, where it is taking place now, the government should fight against it. Yeah, cause it's really bad.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganyi. We just had your opinions and your responses to the trending video of young African migrants being sold off as slaves by militias in Libya. These young African migrants were trying to cross over to Europe through the Mediterranean, through Libya. There's an argument being made by international organizations and human rights organizations saying that the story and the plight of African migrants have been neglected by international media organizations, by their countries of origin, by the African Union, by the European Union. And because there's been less focus on their stories, that's why we see migrants continue to die in thousands as they cross the Mediterranean, and many others being sold, captured and sold off as slaves in countries like Libya. And in the studio with me is Vincent McCorry and Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. They're both with Voice of America. Vincent is the host of Africa 54 that you can catch Monday to Friday on Voice of America. And we're starting off by looking at the role of the media in shaping the narrative on African migration.
You know, I get the sense that the fatigue is starting to set in, and perhaps the CNN report that exposed the sale of people as slaves, which had been going on anyway, and which other people had been covering, because we kind of mentioned it, has helped to take people back to that story to generate a little more renewed interest. But I think with time, you know, people get to see day in, day out, the same story. You start seeing fatigue setting in. So lately, though, I think after that report by CNN, there's a little more increased reporting on the situation in Libya. And then we saw the action by the European Union leaders and the African Union leaders in Ivory Coast, where they discussed this particular problem and came up with a plan that had existed in any case. I think the International Organization of Migration had been trying to repatriate people voluntarily. So they are trying to figure out how to do this. And that lately, I think, has brought the issue again to the fore of reporting. But if you ask me, I think it's not as well reported as we personally would desire to be.
Heidi, do you concur that
I agree with
we
him
should
100%
see more reporting on this?
I agree with Vincent, especially when it comes to the fatigue, you know. And I think one way we as reporters can combat that sort of fatigue is to tell the individual stories of people. Because when we always tell people's, and, you know, we work in a news business where, you know, you have to sort of do updates every day. There is the larger global issue. But then there's the human angle and the human story. And one thing I guess people can never get tired of or hear enough of is the personal stories, because they say there are as many different stories about slavery, about, you know, just about migrants, about refugees, as there are refugees and migrants and people who are now
each person has a story of their own.
Each one's story is different. And wherever we go, wherever we have the opportunity, we should do our best as reporters, especially those who are nearest to it, to tell those individual stories, because those stories are what stick. People don't forget something that speaks to the heart and not just
So that would be the media's role, is to kind of seek out these personal stories of all these different individuals who are affected one way or another, either people who are migrating or even the families that are being left behind, and kind of focus on that as a personal stories. That way it kind of resonates with the audiences that are...
Correct, because sometimes people can be reduced to a headline. And I think just telling people's individual stories reminds the world that these are real lives, you know. These are people's... I always believe that when you take away someone's dignity, you might as well kill them.
I think the other part, the other story that has been missing over all this time, and I think no single media house has invested any resources to that kind of a story, is going back to find out where these people come from and why. What is compelling people to actually take this journey that is treacherous? Many of them are not necessarily blind to the fact that they could die.
And so the question is, what is it that is on the other side that is pushing people away, that they are willing to risk their lives?
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C. With me in the studio is Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54, and Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. And we're talking about African migrants as they continue to suffer and many cases lose their lives as they attempt to migrate to Europe. There are numerous reports that detail the obstacles that many often have to overcome on this journey. But the numbers of those attempting these trips across the Mediterranean continue to grow. They're not getting any lesser, even as we see all these different tragic situations. Numerous reports continue to show African migrants suffering and in many cases losing their lives as they attempt to migrate to Europe. And there are numerous reports that detail the obstacles that many often have to overcome on this journey. Again, just a reminder that we're in the studio with me is Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54, and Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick, a reporter on the same show, also reporting on numerous other issues or different stories on around the continent. Now, Heidi, let me bring you again into the conversation. Do you believe that there has been enough frustration? Do you see enough frustration on the side of the African Union and leadership in general in response to this issue, especially when we see people continue to lose lives? And of course, the recent video showing showing African migrants being sold off as slaves in Libya.
So good you mentioned that, because where is the outrage on the part of our leaders on the continent?
Right.
Why are African presidents and African leaders not as outraged?
Right.
We can look to Europe because there are push and pull factors. There are things that push people, like you mentioned, and things that pull people. The opportunity pulls people towards Europe. And so, all right, this Amnesty report, Vincent, as you reported today, that came out saying that European governments are complicit in the torture and abuse of... But what's the role here of our leaders? Why are they not being held accountable?
Right.
Africans?
You mean the African Union?
African leaders.
Yes, African leaders.
And in fact, we've been talking about that for a long time. We'll bring out up that question that we were seeing all this development in Europe, the Europeans setting up all these operations to stop people from coming, to rescue people. Mm. We'll see 700 people die in one night. And not once did we see African leaders come together and say, these are our people.
This can't
Radio
happen.
Radio silence.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So we see these discussions and conversations. You mentioned earlier that after the video, the CNN video went viral, there were these conversations and discussions happening in the European Union level, European leaders, and then the African Union leaders. But when does that translate into action?
And one of the most, for me, I think, most hopeless thing I had is where some of these African countries, including Nigeria, saying, yes, we're going to help bring back those people. They'll come home. And we've seen a number of Nigerians, for example, or other Africans, you know, come back to their countries. But how do you stop others from going? You have not resolved the issue. They have not fixed the problem that in the first place made people want to go. Mm. No single African country has laid out a plan on how to resolve that issue. First, there has to be an honest discussion. Why are my people leaving?
Correct.
Any leader who is worth, you know, that role, who is worth being called the president of his country, should sit down and say, why would anybody want to leave our country, take a risk to go to Libya or across the ocean? We got to stop that.
Right.
And it's not a question of just bringing back those who are detained in Libya, but it's making sure that our countries can be a place where somebody wants to be, that no one wants to take a risk out of their country unless, of course, there is war.
Yeah.
I just want to add one short thing to what he's saying. We always say to the rest of the world that every issue in Africa is a global issue, because eventually when people are moving across the world, it becomes Europe's problem. It will become America's problem, etc. But I think we need to come to a point where we start to see that when people are on the move, whatever is Africa's problem, people might go, but this problem will come back and revisit the continent.
Right.
And that's where you're seeing xenophobia and issues like that.
All right. So, Heidi, you're from South Africa. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of numbers of people that migrate from around the continent inland, South Africa receives more migrants than any other country. We also see the other layer to that story is that there's been a rise of xenophobia in the last couple of years. What do migrants in South Africa think about their story? What do they talk about, I guess, their journey to South Africa?
I'm so glad you actually brought that up, because I went back home a few months ago, and I am from the city of Cape Town. I was trying to do an interview with South Africans about a particular issue. I couldn't find, in downtown Cape Town, a South African
oh, wow.
to speak to me, just someone who maybe perhaps is a street vendor or, you know, who just sees how the city works every single day. And I started speaking to the people who were there, because I'm realizing, oh my goodness, I had not seen that many foreign nationals in Cape Town. Now, you can always assume that people who run businesses, this is just a cultural thing, that people who do run sort of small businesses, I'm not talking about street vendors, but people who run small businesses, are usually not South African. And I started speaking to one Nigerian guy who said to me, he said, you know, I'm West African, he said, and one thing you cannot take away from us is that we are very entrepreneurial. Mm. Now, these are all his words, and something he said, I don't see this in South Africans. And I asked him why he found himself in Cape Town. And he said, because it's too dangerous to live anywhere else in the country. In Johannesburg, a lot of, and this was the same story for a lot of people I ended up speaking to, saying that they have actually then, they landed in Johannesburg. That was their first place, first place they came to in the country, but then moved to Cape Town, where people, as they say, will leave us alone. But then you stay within the city center, because you go to the townships, you're virtually dead.
Right.
As a business owner, you're dead. And he said to me, you know, I said, why do you think South Africans feel this way about, what do you tell yourself every day as to when people treat you badly, why they are doing that? And he said, three things. I think, A, South Africans are lazy, he said. And I had to keep a straight face through all of this. He thinks South Africans are lazy. And he says they are also blaming, they're frustrated with their own politics.
Right.
And they blame their governments. Yeah, right. And that this was a very crucial point.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're blaming us for their government's lack of service delivery, lack of everything, for the lack of jobs. And that is the truth. Seeing the target, creating soft targets.
Yeah,
that's why you will see not a lot of politicians are too eager to jump into this river and say, hey, this is wrong. Yeah. This is a violation of people's human rights.
Yeah, this is they will not say it's just as South
it's
Africans.
Crime,
yes.
Because that turns the spotlight on them, and on as them, long right. as they can have people fighting amongst each other over scarce resources, nobody looks at them. And that was a very poignant reason. And he said the other thing is just also we're naturally business people, and you don't find a lot of that in South Africa. But it was interesting, and he said, so I moved moved to a new city. And he says, where I think people
will leave me alone. So they were in Johannesburg and they moved to Cape Town. As a result of the xenophobic attacks they were...
One Somali business owner just said to me, I will not set foot in Johannesburg ever again. Mm. But also remember, Cape Town, when you go to the rural areas outside of the city, it's rough for immigrants. Years ago, I interviewed a woman, and I went to a house, and she had just been the victim of a xenophobic attack. And she said to me, do you know what I went through to just get here? I didn't just run from my country. I fled war there. I came. Do you know how many African countries I passed through in order to come here? And she said, if I'm going to die, I don't want to die here. I might as well die in my own country. I didn't flee one dangerous situation to just come and experience that here. And a lot of people are telling us, Zimbabweans say, we would go back if we could. Right. So it's not like we want to live here forever.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront of the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I'm in the studio with Vincent Makori and Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. Vincent is the host of Africa 54 TV show right here on The Voice of America. Heidi is a TV producer and reporter. We're talking about the African migrant crisis in relation to the recent trending video of young African migrants being sold as slaves in Libya. And we're focusing on a range of issues, including the role media has had in shaping African migrant narratives, and many other issues altogether. Now, Vincent, you come from Kenya, a country that is host to millions of Africans from around the continent. But Kenya does not have issues of xenophobia like we have seen in South Africa. What is it that makes Kenya such a special host, a different host to African migrants than, say, South Africa? And but most importantly, what is it that makes Africans turn on their fellow brothers and sisters who are in their countries to seek shelter or refuge, or in this case in Libya, where they're just passing through?
Citizens of Kenya are very embracing of foreigners. They actually have no problem. No person will tell you they've had a problem with a foreigner.
Right.
Lately, people have been feeling very uncomfortable with certain friends from the West African country because they kind of brought in certain practices, you know. But one of the things I think in Kenya is that Kenyans are entrepreneurs themselves. Kenyans are like, they own every business. In fact, it's very difficult to find a foreigner running certain businesses regularly. I mean, you can't. Mm. And it's not because anybody stops anybody, but it's because Kenyans are business people. Every Kenyan, even the one who works as a journalist, also owns a shop. Somebody works as an accountant, and somewhere he also owns a hardware store. He sells car parts. You know, Kenyans are business people. You can ask any Kenyan.
Hustlers.
You can go there. They're like that. It's the nature.
Yeah.
So they never have, and then they have never relied on government. In as much as the government doesn't deliver sometimes, Kenyans never kind of spend their time, you know, concerned about the government has not given us this and all that. They just go out and get it for themselves. Therefore, looking around, they never see a serious competition from foreigners. There are so many Somalis and Ethiopians, and you can ask them, they'll tell you, go there, you set up your own business. Nobody's concerned about that because you're really not a threat to me. I still have my space. I'm doing my business. If you can succeed to do your business, do it. Now, I really understand the South African problem where first there's the nature of the people in that they find themselves in a state of poverty, and then they see these foreigners prospering in their own country.
Mm.
And then the government has not done anything to change their economic circumstances. So obviously, and you can see a little bit of that even in this United States of America, where some people feel a little uncomfortable with, say, African migrants who seem to do well.
A little more affluent.
Yeah. More affluent. Yeah. They own all these businesses. And you find that some of our brothers who come from this part of the world feel like, you're taking...
Correct.
As if what you're taking from them,
right.
But you're really not
right.
taking, is because somehow they don't find themselves having a share of the wealth of that particular town or that particular country.
Mm.
So it's not like South Africans just hated foreigners. It has to do with economics and especially the lack of certain vital
services. All the world's ills come down to economics, right? And it is about, you will not find, South Africa has a very large wealth and income gap. So you have very poor, extremely wealthy people where you cannot believe where you are, and then very small but burgeoning middle class. So wealthy people, of course, they're the most liberal with everything because they have nothing to worry about, they feel. You will not find refugees, migrants in the boardrooms. So people who are in the middle class, they're very welcoming.
Mm.
But it is this in poverty-stricken areas where people are battling for resources.
Right.
But I want to also just touch on one other thing that you said, that, you know, Kenyans are very welcoming and all of that. The thing about South Africa, when you come to South Africa and you are now officially registered as a refugee, you don't live in a refugee camp. You are allowed to move on the streets.
Right.
That is the difference to many. Like Kenya has yeah,
oh,
but you have refugee camps until I don't know what the process is there. We don't have refugee camps.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying that we don't have, because we don't have refugee camps, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Mm.
People see foreigners on the street doing their
everywhere.
Thing constantly.
Right. Right.
And
yeah.
So they see that. It's the optics that they see as a threat.
Mm.
They see their country. I mean, I go to one from one other suburb to another. The place is crawling with foreign nationals. And South Africa was a very insular country for many, many years, where we only literally were just staring into each other's faces.
Right.
And so the world was cut off from that country. And in many respects, South Africa still operates as this isolated, very provincial kind of place.
And I think that is another, aspect of the problem, is that the fact that apartheid just ended the other day, they were not used to traveling outside or people coming in, as opposed, say, to an East African country like Kenya, where way back, even 1950-something, we received Rwandans and we had Somalis and we had Sudanese. We have Kibera, this biggest slum, was actually created initially as a settlement for Nubians. Well, from Sudan. That's like way back in the 40s. So Kenyans were used to people coming in from other places and settling in and, you know, doing business, buying property, no big deal. But it's true, of course, we also have this big refugee camp, which holds mostly Somalis and a few Sudanese and Ethiopians.
Now, in another viral video that was trending recently, a video of Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo speaking at a press conference where he was hosting President Macron of France. And he says that, you know, Africans did not invent migration. And for many generations, for centuries, people have been migrating from one country to another or from one region to the other for different reasons. And in essence, I guess what he was trying to say, that we should stop casting this as a primarily an African migrant crisis. What is your take on that, Haiti?
Yes, people migrate, but when you migrate all over the world, but when you're seeing these huge masses of people, who many of whom are fleeing something, like we said earlier, there are push and pull factors, who are fleeing. These are not people who are upping today, oh, I will now go to Europe to go and look for better opportunities for my children. No, these are people who are fleeing persecution and murder. That is a problem. So you can say, oh, yes, this happens all over the world, but then we need to sweep in front of our own doorstep first and clean up there first, I think.
Now, Vincent, do people have, and in this case Africans, do the Africans have a right to migrate from whatever country they are for whatever purpose, whether it's they're escaping violence or whether they're living for in search for greener pastures or for opportunities where they could feed their families? Do they have the right to migrate without being maligned or ostracized, as we have seen many times in the media, either by recipient communities, but most importantly by the African leaders, whose attitude in this whole thing has always been to talking about it in terms of these people don't have a right to be living anyway. They have no reason to be living anyway.
I strongly believe that people have a right to make a living whichever way they find fit for them, if moving to another place will make it possible. But then when you see 700 people die at sea in one day, and then and 3-4 days later you see 1,200 die, I think there's a problem there. But I think individuals have every right to seek opportunities elsewhere.
Correct.
But you don't want to live in a way where you literally are risking your life to get there, because then that is not a normal way of trying to find opportunities elsewhere. You must be escaping from something that is really extreme. If it is poverty, then it is extreme poverty. If it is some kind of insecurity, it is really extreme. It is a different thing than, you know, you and I, let's say me, you know, I'm somewhere in Kenya, see an opportunity to work in Europe, I send an application, they call me and move, why not? I see an opportunity while I'm in Europe to work in the United States, I apply, I come here.
You see an opportunity in Africa, then you move back to Africa.
I can go move back to Africa. So that is a different dynamic than having to leave because you're compelled by certain circumstances.
And I agree with Nana Akufo-Addo only to the extent that, yes, migration is not a new thing, and Africans aren't the only ones who are doing it. And also just remember, many, many decades ago, centuries ago, many Europeans were packing up and leaving and going to Africa for more opportunity in search of a better life, in search of opportunity, in search of many other things.
Yeah.
But
good point.
let's not forget that.
Right.
And let's not then plunder a continent and then expect the people are not going to come to your doorstep.
Right. Now they're coming.
You create a problem, it's going to follow you.
Yeah.
But I think our leaders need to stop being in denial about this, because denialism is almost like aiding and abetting too, because you're doing nothing about it.
Same thing as, you know, the politicians in South Africa in the issue of xenophobia.
It's denialism. Yeah. And that right. seems to be a political tactic. Yeah. Let's make this, dilute the issue by saying it's nothing new. Yeah. Everybody does it. Yeah. Everybody does. But our issue here is let's take care of our own so that our people are not fleeing and our people aren't on the run.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. I want to thank Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54. Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick is also a reporter on that show. I want to thank all of you who provided your views and opinion on this show. And of course, for tuning in to the show today. Catch you next time, same place, right here on The Voice of America. Until then, goodbye.
This is VOA News. I'm